Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Lynn Alexander. This is Project U Radio, and this is a project of the Literary Underground, and we are actually live right now. I'm going to bring in Paul Corman Roberts. I think he's here. I hope so. And I will. I just want to introduce what we're doing tonight. One of the things that we talked about doing was and we've done a bunch of different shows on a bunch of different programs, and this is a new page set up by Michelle McDonald. She's responsible for the Literary Underground, and it sort of brings to mind the question what that means. You know, I guess it's one of those things where we get together a lot and we talk about things like labels. We talk about just different things of interest to the small press community, the independent press community. And, you know, there are always people that have a number of opinions about these things. I just want to make sure that Paul's on. Are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. We can hear you. That's great.
Oh, okay,
I just
good.
Wanted to make
I wasn't
sure.
Sure.
Yeah, you know how it is with the first time you do a particular program, you just have to sort of do some housekeeping, some logistics, and I just wanted to sort of explain a little bit about what we were doing and why we started doing it. And I mentioned, I don't know if you heard that I was sort of just mentioning the fact that anytime people have a project or something like, I know we went through this at Outsider Writers. There was a lot of discussion at one point about what it means to be an outsider,
right.
If it's by choice, if it's by design, if it's by default, if it's a sort of a community that you find yourself in or a community that you seek out. And so that's sort of where we are with it. And I appreciate that you're doing this with me, Paul, because you know, I know that I've roped you into a lot of different things over the years.
Well, yeah, well, what is one of my the line or the, it's not my line. It's a line that's been used over and over again. You don't always choose the gig. Sometimes the gig chooses you, and it's sort of, I think I once fancied myself an underground writer. I think in my real wild romantic days, I thought of underground writing as Hunter Thompson and. And I guess some people called Bukowski kind of an underground writer, although looking back on it, I don't know what the definition of that is. Is that really true? Who knows? But I think it's really appealing. Sometimes I think, at Outsider Writers, that's kind of what they were going for. Just everybody was trying to avoid the word revolution because it gets a little cliched and misused and misrepresented. And I know people like to shy away from words that seem misused and misrepresented. And, of course, underground is going to be one of those words that always is. There's probably as many definitions of what, or as many ideas of what constitutes an underground artist or an underground writer or an underground creator or even an underground activist of any sort out there. As many opinions on that as there are artists out there, you know.
Right, definitely. I mean, that's one of the reasons. I mean, that's sort of the thinking behind doing some of these shows with particular topics in mind, because I think that that's absolutely true, that there are people that, I mean, there are just as many opinions about it as there are people involved. And, you know, I notice also when we talk about labels, You know, people are very touchy about labels. People, you know, want to be very specific. They want to, you know, they want to say what something means, what it doesn't mean. And, you know, we all have our thoughts. I mean, one of the things that I've said is that, you know, it's for, in our case, at least, I know that at Literary Underground, that it's also a community. And I know Michelle is, anyone who knows Michelle McDaniel knows that she's all about nurturing community, fostering community, doing whatever she can to just sort of, you know, get things together, she gets a lot of projects going. So,
Someday she'll be recognized as one of the great social engineers of our age, I think.
I think so. I mean, she does a lot of things that people don't see. I mean, you know, just the whole wiki that she set up with just different entries about different things. I mean, it's gotten
huge and complex on that thing. I'm impressed with how that
right.
Everything's gone along.
I know.
It makes
I
my
know.
Head. People always telling, you know, I get accused of being over busy a lot, but goodness gracious, I can't even imagine putting a project like that. It's very impressive.
I know. I think she's hero to a lot of people, that's for sure. But yeah, one of the things that I think that I mentioned to you is that, I mean, at least for me, underground means, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that you don't ever cross over into the commercial sort of realm. It doesn't necessarily mean that if the opportunity presented that, you know, that you shun money, that you shun technology, or that you're necessarily apart from the commercial world. But I know what it means to me is that there's sort of a lack of recognition there. A lot of times there are people that are interested in doing their own thing without having really to answer to anyone. Sometimes that means doing things independently, setting up their own presses, gluing things in their own homes, stapling wherever they have to staple, because of just being interested in getting things out on your own terms.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and well, you've got Mr. Fugit up there in Ohio. That's got the adhesive binder down in his, grinding away down in the basement there. That's amazing all the different levels that they do it on, and sometimes these things are literally underground. the presses and the readings and the things like that.
Right. Well, it feels that way. And like I've said, you know, there's also sort of this idea that, you know, that's sort of like rats that are sort of scraping along and, you know, kind of fighting sometimes over the same scraps. You know, I mean, there comes a point where, you know, you say, you know what, you know, instead of fighting for what we get, sometimes we have to take matters into our own hands and, you know, create our own scraps and, you know, create our own, you know, system.
Well, you were saying, yeah, when you were mentioning that earlier, you were thinking like it doesn't really, you don't necessarily shun a commercial opportunity or something. I think intent goes a long way towards maybe really sort of getting the essence of what we might think of as being an underground writer. I've hardly been one to, criticize people getting their book deals and their books published and something like that, but. You know, it seems like you're right. It's a very small world, a small market. There's nobody's really making a big living in it, you know. And it's kind of like, well, I think, you know, underground really speaks more to an intention of wanting to change something. Like you're not really in it for the money, you know. It's if you can get some, fine. But ultimately, if you're using really understanding your opportunities as somebody who presents your work to a larger public,
right.
Regardless of what the size of your audience is, you know, if you're looking for a way to get through to, you know, if inspiring change at the very least is on your agenda, and you're very forward about that and original and presenting that in a way that resonates, you know, I think that's sort of getting to the heart of it, you know. Sometimes you get those opportunities, I think, as an artist to, you know, talk to a larger audience at times. You know, it's funny, if you stick with it, if you persevere, suddenly you'll find yourself with these, not necessarily going to alter your life, but there's a moment where you can really be an example and to a larger group of people and inspire them in ways. And that's when you see, I think, you know, intent in an artist. And, you know, and if it's, they're really to jar the reality of the people into a place where, hey, you know, they've got to really, you know, think about, you know, fundamentally doing things differently, then I think that gets close to it. I wouldn't pretend that I could define it really, really tightly, you know. It's like I can, sometimes I think I can look at underground and recognize it when I see it. But I found I can be fooled. You know, the look and feel of what is widely considered underground has been co-opted many times over the years. You do have to have a discerning eye when you're checking out what's being presented to you as somebody who engages in the arts and writing.
Right,
and whatever you see.
And we actually have 770 on, and I'm going to click. And, you know, we have this little switchboard set up, and I'm not sure who it is. So generally what we do, and I think most people that use this format do the same thing. They sort of identify by the area code. So I don't know if you're on 770, but you are actually you're actually live right now. So do you have an opinion or something that you, you know, I mean, anybody, all views are welcome, obviously. That's
well,
the point
cool.
of doing this.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Paul and Lynn and everybody listening. My name is Jack Barnell. I write under the name The Emotional Orphan sometimes. And, you know, I'm sitting here listening, and, you know, I've really kind of I've dropped off the scene a bit for some of the reasons that you're actually talking about. I mean, I'm involved in quiet little maneuvers here and there and building up my own, you know, platform, so to speak, and developing my voice. And, you know, I use a lot of the newer technology tools and things to help carry my message and to be involved with the other writers and poets that are out there. But I kind of took a dive. I mean, I jumped in with both feet, and I really kind of backed off a little bit from doing a lot of submissions and, you know, putting my name out there and really trying to work towards some level of recognition, I guess, not only for the art, but, you know, I very much support everybody else in the arts. And, you know, I did a radio show and, you know, two or three different blogs going on and this and that and involved with different groups of people through Facebook. And, you know, and I found myself really getting sidetracked with a lot of the work and pulling myself away from the from actually writing and trying to develop that internal voice. And you know, what is it? Because I think ultimately when I think of underground or outlaw or, you know, any of these other cliches, ultimately I think that what that means to me at least is, you know, you have something that for whatever reason you think is important to say. And I found myself getting really kind of pulled away from what that message was for me and what is it, you know, how does my life and what I'm doing on a daily basis translate itself into the art? And is that providing a valuable, I mean, I think art serves a vital purpose. And I think that at least from my perspective, I like to be able to walk away from, and I hope people walk away from my writing with, you know, something to think about. And you know, and I found myself really kind of lost. You know, I could put some pretty words together and you know, maybe even have somebody print it, but I wasn't really connected to the message as much as I really wanted to be. So I've kind of dropped off a little bit from being visible. I'm always present, and I'm always watching, and I'm always promoting other people's stuff. But, you know, it's some of these things that you guys are talking about is exactly, I think, what defines the outlaw or the underground or whatever other word you might want to use is you've got a voice, you're developing a voice, you have something, you have a strong opinion, you have something you want to say, and you hope that whatever it has some value to whoever might be listening. And you know, you can either be carried away with developing what that message is, or you could be developing an audience to hear you talk. And, you know,
right.
I can go and get a soapbox and stand on any corner and build an audience. You know, I personally got kind of carried away with this whole, you know, build a platform and you know, get some recognition, and I do social media for a living, so, you know, I'm all enthralled with the technology and, you know, e-books versus real books and the smell of leather and blah, 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 you know, and all this, you know, stuff that,
okay.
You know, it's not important. I mean, it is, but it's not a make-or-break deal, at least to me personally. The reality is if you don't fucking like e-books and you print your books and people buy them or they don't buy them and they read them or they don't read them, and regardless of what you and I decide is going to be appropriate, technology is going to keep moving forward, and Kindle and you know, all those tools are going to, you know, e-books are going to outsell hardcover books just like they did last year at Christmas. And so I can, you know, hold to that value as hard as I want to, but the world's going to keep moving, and that's not really what's important. What's important is, you know, is the, you know, I mean, it gets back to that word activism. You know, I mean, that's where I've ended up. I mean, I'm enthralled with the whole Occupy thing. You know, I'm a convicted felon, so from many, many years of my life, I didn't bother with politics because I couldn't vote legally, and, you know, and I didn't pay attention to what the hell was going on around me. And, you know, that was a big mistake for me. And so I've had to cram my little brain full of, you know, so much facts and information and, you know, opinions and watching videos, and it's just really tricked my trigger, and it's really re-educated me on the value of art as a tool and how important my voice can or not be, and that's my choice. And if, you know, maybe I'm not one of those guys who's going to go and camp in downtown Atlanta where I live, maybe I am. But regardless, I do have tools that I can use at my disposal, and so I need to be real damn sure what my message is and be a hell of a lot more concerned about carrying that message out there and keeping art alive and keeping it true to its purpose and, you know, doing those things rather than turning it all into a self-focused endeavor to, you know, publicly masturbate myself with what a great writer I am, and you know, please buy my book. You know,
you can always find an audience for that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, then I don't need to sell freaking books. But well, maybe, I don't know. I'm getting older and fatter and dumber. But you know, and in the old days maybe. But you know, I mean, I've watched what you guys do. I mean, I know Mr. Paul Corman Roberts very well, and Lynn, of course, we've rubbed elbows from place to place.
Right,
for a while now, and you know, and we've never ever talked, and you know, but what's important is, I, you know, there are like the Michelle McDaniels, like you were saying earlier. I mean, there's movers and shakers out there, and it's not about moving and shaking to be seen, or it's about, you know, there's a more of a unified purpose, and I think when you talk about words like underground and outlaw and this and that, that's what you're talking about. You're talking about some unity there. And even if your opinion is different than mine and your voice is louder than mine, it doesn't fucking matter, because we have the same end result goal in mind, and that is we want somebody to listen because there's important things going on around us. And, you know, that's what art, whether it's writing or sculpture or whatever, you know, that's what it's been doing since the very beginning. You know, anybody ever drew on a cave wall? So,
I agree with you. I mean, I think that one of the things that you mentioned is that, you know, you have something to say. And I think one of the things about the whole underground term, the word, the concept of it, is that to a certain extent, you know, a lot of people are pushed underground. They're marginalized. They're you know, maybe sometimes groups of people that don't necessarily have the support to speak out and to get their work out there. And I think that that's why that community part is very important. And I think we're seeing that definitely. I don't want to go into the Occupy movement too much, but I think that that's part of it. When you start to see your neighbors, your community, the people around you, it becomes a little bit easier to say, you know what, I have the support of other people to do this. And I think people like Michelle are very important as far as doing that,
right.
You know, and creating that community, because whether you're sort of an outsider or, you know, underground, you know, like a lot of terms that we use by choice, because that's the way that you want to set about getting your message out there, or whether you've been pushed there because you don't necessarily agree with the message or the mainstream. I mean, you know, a lot of what is making money out there. I mean, I can't be critical of all of it, you know, but a lot of it is not necessarily the best that society has to offer. So, somebody sent me a comment and said, you know, I don't want to call in because I have a feeling that people will disagree with me. But the reason people are underground is because they can't make it in the commercial mainstream world. They can't make it. They can't earn a living, they can't make it in the competitive capitalist structure that's there. And maybe
that's the next Twilight. That's all you got to do.
Yeah, but you know what? Maybe there comes a time where people say, you know what? What's popular isn't necessarily what's good, and what sells isn't necessarily what's good. And there's a lot of good stuff that's not out there.
You're probably describing what makes that person a hell of an artist. I mean, you know, that's a thing. I know from my personal experience, I've always been an outsider and quite proud of it. So to get out in the front is not that difficult for me because I've had to survive too and done sales and blah blah blah. But you know, but I was always, you know, that's what fuels my art, is that core feeling that I had from as far back as I can remember. And that's just me. I mean, I'm not saying that that's for everybody, but I think that those things you mentioned about that person who wrote to you and said they're not going to call in is probably exactly what makes them a hell of an artist, is being able to tap into that. You know, I mean, how many times have we ever heard from somebody who actually has, chops as a writer, say, oh, you know, I don't want to promote myself. I don't know how to promote myself. I can't do this. I don't want to do the book tour. You know, all the crap. And I get that, you know, because
right.
That's not be part of it. I'm more comfortable in the middle of the night, you know, by candlelight writing in a freaking notebook than, you know, standing on a TED stage talking about how, you know, what I've just written is going to change the world or whatever. So, you know, I read a really cool article, actually, that taps into, and again, I hear you, I don't want to get into the whole Occupy thing either, but this author, Allison Lee Lilly, has just written a piece that's based in the Occupy movement as art, and that, you know, what it's done is it's reframed the thinking and changed the discussion. That's what art is designed to do, and so regardless of what happens from this point forward, with the whole movement and everything that comes from that, it's done its job. I mean,
absolutely. I mean, I think it's exciting what's going on. I mean, you know, I'm definitely not knocking the movement and everything. I guess I was thinking more in terms of, you know, not wanting to detract from what we were talking about. But I absolutely think that that's true. And I'm so glad that you called and brought up the points that you brought up. And I hope, you know, what I'm going to do is bring on 818 also, and maybe if you could stay on and, you know, if that's cool. I mean, I just, like I say, the more people that that can weigh in on it, either side, like I said, there are people that have pretty strong feelings either way about the word. So I'm not sure if 818 is on, but I did put it through. So
818's right here.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing real good. Is this Ren?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How's everybody else?
Super, very super. Good, thank you. Is that you, FN?
That's FN.
Hey, that's her.
Yeah,
hey.
And I've been listening with a lot of interest because I not only can say I am a survivor of Vietnam, but also the Summer of Love in San Francisco as well. And I did see a lot of the movement and the demonstrations and the takeovers, such as going on now.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfortunate thing is, and it's happening today, the media is all corporate, and
right.
So the word doesn't really get out to the I'm from a real small town in southern Illinois. My roots are southern, and But getting back to the where you can make a statement, I enlisted in the service before Vietnam. If I'd known there was going to be a Vietnam, I wouldn't have enlisted. I might have went to Canada. But then again,
right.
I had this desire for adventure, so it's hard to say. But I'm in the Navy now for 4 years. I'm going, Christ, what did I get into? Because I was rebellious in high school. So I actually, that's when I really started, we had, like if I'd go into CIC, which is a Combat Information Center for radarmen, and it had the plotting boards turned down, you see on TV, with the guys writing backwards and everything, and I'd go in, air search would be turned off a lot until there was activity, and I'd throw obscenities or make statements about an officer or something. And actually, one of the first things that I co-published, the only thing I co-published was they do a cruise book, which is like a high school yearbook. And I did a satire on one that outsold the, with some help. And earlier, the thing about going mainstream, I've had several opportunities in my life to go mainstream. And I thought, well, you know, if I did it for, I had a chance to write for the soaps, of all things. And,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and this friend of mine, you talk about it. He called himself a guerrilla, as in guerrilla warfare artist, and he did these humongous sculptures. Then he had spent several thousand dollars. Like, he set one down in the Department of Water and Power's fountain in Los Angeles and didn't know what to do with it. It was going to cost him like $5,000 back then to move it to a city of Santa Monica who supports the arts. They took it. And when Reagan was running for president, he campaigned so hard, and he said, if he's elected, because I said, Wade, what are you going to do? He says, I'm going to Australia. And sure as shit, he went to Australia. Then,
followed through with that.
And then when Reagan decided to run again, he was right back, campaigned again, back to Australia. And but he invited me to a party, his birthday party, and because he wanted me to write for the soaps, or to write. I've attempted several times to write a commercial bestseller, which I'm capable of doing, but I get bored with it because that it's not in me. So I'm.
Do you feel that there's? I mean, there. A lot of people have said, you know, they are where they are by choice. It's not that they haven't had opportunities. It's just that there's a lot of people feel that there's a certain formula that you have to follow for certain commercial, you know, successes. Really, that there's a formula. That there's a way you have to sort of be programmed to write. Is that part of it that you want to do your thing, right? You want the freedom to write the way you want to.
Right. I thought, well, Lynn, I don't mean to be rude, and I'll cut this short so you can get, for example, when I said the soap operas, you know, I thought, okay, I'd do that so many hours a day, and then write. And then I'm at Wade's party, and he introduces me to all these suits. So this is a casual party, and when I pulled up, because I'd never been to his place before, drew some good marijuana, by the way. damn good. I thought I was, because I'm going, I was on my Harley, one of them, and wearing my colors, and I get off the bike, and I saw this hippie-looking chick, you know, this mid-70s, and so I'm going to ask her, is this the right place? And she looked up and spooked, and or maybe she was just stoned. And then I saw a volleyball game going on. I'm going, I'm at the wrong place. And I went home and called him, and he said, no, he was at the right place. And I says, man, I can't do it. And I said, those aren't my kind of people, you know. And so he said, I've been to your parties. So he, it was real important he introduced me to these soap opera people that I'd be, you know, working with and for. And one of them, they're ignoring me after the introduction. And one of them pulls out a yellow bowl pipe and caps it full of marijuana. And I'm going, Jesus Christ, I was doing that a long time ago and mixing aromatic Kentucky Club mixture, pipe tobacco with it to hide the smell. And in small towns, I'd be at work selling shoes or something. I'd fill up a bowl in the tobacco. But anyway, to make a point, I just said, you know, I just can't do it.
I think that's sort of says something though about you. I mean, about your willingness to stick to your guns. You know, I mean, I think that's, you know, I think
is
that's
that
a
Brian,
good thing.
Is Brian
it's an
around?
Important thing.
Lynn?
Is Brian
no,
around?
The reason I want to ask him this is years ago, I was with a young lady that had a daughter, and I did a Kenneth Patchen children's book based on one of his poems that's hadn't sold yet. Even Miriam Patchen tried to get it sold, and then she died. But anyway, Too Tall Tina, that's her biker handle, of course. She's like 6 feet, and I'm only 5'8". And she said she saw the Patchen, the original, which I still have. She goes, do a children's book. And Jeffrey Dahmer was in the news then, so I did a Jeffrey Dahmer Christmas story. And Brian published it in
nice and
Side Goat. And I'm still trying to find a publisher to do it in print, or I'm going to do it myself. But guess what? She never asked me to do another children's book.
Well,
okay,
no,
that's underground,
Brian's
baby.
Not
that's
on,
underground.
Brian's not on tonight. I mean, I think you can probably you could probably get a hold of him though about that. I did pick up line 217, and
okay,
one
ahead.
Of the things
sorry.
That I wanted to do. Well, I mean you can stay on too. I mean, I'm not necessarily cutting anyone off. It's just this is who I think it is. One of the things that and you're in 217. You're on, right?
I'm here. Hello.
Okay, hi, hello. I just wanted to make sure, like I said, we try to do the logistics, work that out. But, I mean, one of the things is that, you know, Michelle is really the one that's been behind the Literary Underground, so I kind of thought it would be a good idea if we had an opportunity to sort of ask her, you know, where that came from and what her reasoning is behind it. And I'm thinking that's who we have here. Am I correct?
Yes, you got it. And I wanted
I just
want to
say hi,
guys,
Michelle.
You know, hello.
Okay,
I'm glad. For stepping up and doing the show. I don't really like, this platform for myself so much. I'd like being in the background more. But I thought I would call in and say, you know, the underground just appealed to me personally, and I just felt it, so it worked for me. But as far as defining it, I think I've tried to sit down and do that more times than I'd care to admit and never really came up with anything good. So I think it's more just if you feel it or you're there then and it works for you, you can call it whatever you want, underground, outsider, whatever. It doesn't really matter. And to me, it's more just doing what you want to do or need to do without worrying about, you know, the payoff or perceived payoff.
Right, or what other people think or what other people impose on you as far as this is what will be successful,
yeah.
This is what will sell, this is how you make money, this is, you know, you're sort of, you have more freedom, I think,
to do
your thing.
I don't worry about, you know, if you do something that does work commercially, I have no problem with that. It's just when I look at things like Twilight, you know, that's not what I'm interested in reading or writing, so I don't need to do that. I'm not concerned about, you know, making money. I'm concerned about reading and writing the kinds of things that interest me. So I think, you know, we should work together to promote each other and be there and do more. It just is nice.
I think you kind of hit on it a little bit, too. I think it's when you find yourself doing work that, you know, a traditional author or somebody who is, you know, sort of works in the comfort of the machine of authorness or machine writing, I guess you could feel of it. But it's, you know, you basically have to hustle. it's not just hustling for yourself, it's hustling for other people too. It's creating those opportunities that I think that we've all, I think we all owe, all came to be recognized by other people through other people. And I think there's a sense of service sometimes of going back and doing that. And I think that,
you
I think that's
kind
sort
of paying
sets apart.
It forward a little bit.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. But
yeah.
I think that's something it shares in common with, you know, you can point to something like the Occupy movement and say, you know what, here's a situation where people with traditional working class avenues now closed to them are trying to find new ways to put their work together in a way that's meaningful for them. And I think that's sort of where it can link together right there, I think. But you know, that's moves towards the sense of it anyway.
Well, and things like the Occupy movement just point the finger at the reality. And you know, you use the word machine, and that's exactly what it is. And there's something that's very illusionary about it as well. I mean, let's be real here, okay? These best-selling, you know, authors, you know, they write a book, they get their, you know, get on the list, and they're selling a shitload of books. And then 3 weeks later, all of a sudden, they're selling another one. You mean to tell me that they sat down and wrote another 50,000-page book, you know, and have it, you know, just sitting on the wayside? You know, it's illusionary. There's ghostwriters involved. There's, you know, there's ghostwriters. There's other people involved. There's, you know, it is a machine, and it is, and I think it's very exemplary of what happens in the regular corporate world. I mean, you know, so I think that the whole outsider, you know, underground, outlaw, whatever the hell you want to call it, you know, that's where that fits in. I mean, I interviewed one time with a guy who wanted me to, you know, I thought, okay, if I can get paid to write, that'll be awesome because I can just sit down and I can get paid to write. And he wanted me to write e-books on these really technical subjects, and he wanted like 30,000 pages a week, and there was no way that I could give him the output that he wanted and still be able to pay attention to my own stuff. And it just really, you know, that struck really – I mean, I learned something in that, you know. There's just no way that I could do it.
Right.
And I'm a slave to, you know, heaven forbid I should use the word muse, but, you know, I am a slave to being able to do that. And if I'm wrapped up in my work and maybe my head's not and heart isn't where it needs to be to actually pin what I would pin as art. So, you know, for me to there is a level of selling my soul that happens if I step outside of that outsider category, because I just am not able to do it, or I eventually feel guilty about it, or something gets left in the dirt that needs to be paid attention to and fostered, and that's, you know, that's the voice that I'm trying to develop, and you know, what is that message that I'm trying to grasp within myself and then maybe throw out at the world? If they care, they care. If they don't, they don't. At least I get it out there. And you know, so, I mean, I think that it's very, it's all on an even scale with what's happening in the world all around us, and it's always been that way. I mean, you know, you talked earlier in the show about the William S. Burroughs and the, you know, the Hunter S. Thompsons and the people like that who would have fit that title or chosen that title, and you know, they are counterculture to a degree. Again, hesitating to use,
but
you know,
our world is our world is not their world either. You have to have a very different form of subversion going on today now, honestly.
There is some truth to, you know, if you're really going to make a change to a degree, you have to do it from the inside, and you know, that's where I'm doing it. I'm developing my own voice. I'm investigating my own world. And then if I have something to say about it, I say about it. If it does something out there, it does something out there. But I've done what I need to do, and I think that that's where the change really does happen. You have to do it from inside. And I don't mean that inside the established, you know, genres, but, you know, from inside yourself and project that out. And I think
right down to the immediate world around you, even just the world or the place where you live, wherever that is. How can I be of better service to my community in this place, even whether that's talent is as a writer. You use your talents to the best that you can. You know,
May I ask a question of everybody?
Sure.
Sure.
A couple, actually. Any of you heard of C.D. Payne?
Yes.
Okay.
Heard of.
Reading. Read the Youth in a Revolt, then buy the Doubleday version, and look how they butchered it. And
right.
now he just, and then there's another book I highly recommend. It's called Fuck Yes, A Happy Guide to Acceptance of Everything by the Reverend Wing Fang Fang Foo or something like that, who I swear to God is Tom Robbins. And you will see, I corresponded with this guy, and he said, and I asked him a question, and but anyway, he said he had sold 89,000 copies of that book, Fuck Yes, and could not find a commercial publisher to pick it up.
Wow.
But
well, I
you
think
can find
also
it,
there's.
You, but I'm saying.
It's also, there's also a franchise element, I think, now. I think now a lot of what we see that's commercially successful are things that translate into, you know, T-shirts at Hot Topic and merchandise and movie rights and selling posters. And,
well,
you know, there's sort of
the
franchise element, you know, to it, too.
Well, look who owns a publishing house. Well,
right.
Wait a minute, Lynn. My first novel, small press, 3,000 copies here, 5,000 hardbound in Germany. My publisher did T-shirts, and we did quite well with them. Thank you. I know what you're saying.
Right, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that that's sort of what
well,
we're
well,
seeing
the
is
whorehouse.
It's money. It's money, and
you,
it's, you know.
If you can't sell all the different pieces at Walmart, then forget about it. You
right,
know, it's
right.
Just, it's just not worth their time.
Right. And one of the things that we do offer, I mean, as far as that community thing, getting back to that, is that, you know, we don't have the money to compete with that, and we know that. We don't have the money to and the resources to put behind the things that we do. So, you know, to a certain extent, I think community and, you know, one hand washing the other is sort of what we have to offer, you know. And that's it's sometimes it isn't much, but it's maybe all we have to really, you know, well, as far as getting what we want to get out there. I mean, we don't have millions of dollars to put behind promoting things, and you know, it sort of creates a situation. I'm actually going to pick up another caller. I'm going to do 626 because, you know, like I said, the more people that can sort of chime in, I think the better, if you guys don't mind.
Cool.
I have 626 on, and you know, we're I assume that you've heard the whole thing, but if you haven't, we're just sort of talking about what it means, what underground means, and how you feel about it, the label, the movement, the community, whatever you feel like saying about that. So 626 is on now too. At least I hope so. Are you there?
Hello.
Hello. You're 626, right?
That's me. Hi. I'm Kevin Ridgway.
Hi, welcome. We're glad you called.
Thank you. Yeah, I was just listening in. My computer went on the fritz, and I've been listening in for the past 5 minutes or so. So I kind
of. That's cool. I mean. I mean, that's, you know, that's fine. I mean, like I said, it's one of those questions where I think the more people that can sort of weigh in, the better. I mean, some people have, you know, have sent comments and said, you know, I don't mean anything disrespectful to people that call themselves underground or outsider or any of those terms, but, you know, there have been some definite differences of opinion on this question, so... I think the more we hear from people, you know, the better. So, you know,
well,
what do you think?
Well, my feeling is I don't like to call myself underground. I don't like to define myself in any way. I think that I'm relatively new to the community anyway. I've only been publishing for the past year or so. And I think that I've certainly been more embraced by people that you would say belong to the underground community, at least in terms of publications and whatnot. I felt a lot more of a kinship with people like that than I have with, you know, submitting to other publications in the small press. I felt like I have more of a belonging. But I can't really, I don't feel like I'm one to really define what underground is. But
I mean, what? How do you feel? But I mean, when you say that you feel more kinship, I mean, I think what you're talking about is that there's a little bit more of a sense of community that we really have to sort of stick by each other to a certain extent. I mean, I know that that's. I mean, I know Michelle with all the different things she's doing. I mean, I know she's. If anyone believes in that, it's Michelle. I mean, it's, you know, trying to support what people are doing, and you know.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to say that it's not a click. You know, if you want to show up and do the work, then you're in, you know. And
right.
I don't care if you have a different opinion. I respect that. And even when you piss me off, I still love you. You know, it's just we don't have those resources. It's important that we work together and promote each other and be supportive, you know, or else it just gets... too bogged down to, you know, keep moving.
Well, I don't think anyone but someone in the, quote, underground, unquote, because I've been around since the 60s, would publish something like my poetry and art chat book, Piss on the Pope. So, and they're always, so I don't know what to call it. I don't like the term outlaw, underground. We're just goddamn good writers and poets and artists.
Right. Or willing to take risks in ways that, you know, you might not find in other places.
We're not
asking
for the money.
I think it's important to note, too, that not only would anybody outside of those circles share those type of things, but they're the ones who are going to read it, too. I mean, that's the thing.
Right.
It's like, you know, I mean, a lot of the small press work out there, I mean, it's small press work because there isn't a big audience for it. And you know, forget the commercial appeal and all that crap. I mean, it's just, it's too far beyond the status quo, I think, to really be accepted in any other circles than somebody who thinks a little bit differently, you know, or a little bit outside the box of the norm, you know.
Well, you know, in the 60s and 70s, my novel, The Whorehouse, when it came out, you still had your mom-and-pop bookstores. You didn't have Amazon.com and all those. So you did have support, like either-or bookstore in Hermosa Beach, the Bookmark in Thousand Oaks, California. And they're all gone.
The literary genre was an actual market back in those days.
Yeah.
You could actually write a book that was supposed to just be, didn't have to be anything more than, it was supposed to be good writing or good storytelling or something. But it didn't have to be horror or science fiction or fantasy or a western or a romance. It didn't have to fit into a genre per se. You know, right? It was expected that you would have writers in a society who would sort of like reflect. I mean, you take it for granted. You know, this whole notion of progressive thought, we can see through the years that it's been undermined by the political powers that be from top to bottom every year that you've had, you know, popular movements and whatnot. But when you really collapse the markets and make them limited and make it so rigid and digitized, there's no room for the gray area. You have to funnel off into some genre or else you don't get to be a part of the machine.
And see, when the movement or what, you know, the occupying that's going on now, when that goes away, we're still going to be here. It's like the Samizdat in Russia years ago.
Right.
You know, so those movements, you know, they're it's almost a cycle.
Which is actually still going on. I mean, some people might not know what that refers to, but I mean, my understanding, because we've actually done publications in that model too, where it's distribution and it's you know, just sharing and you know, I don't know if people are familiar with what they were doing with that, but it was sort of free to distribute and free to share the work. That's what you're referring to, right?
Oh, right on Brought again, and please plant this book in Frisco. Send it on the street corner, get them away. Now try to buy one. And I have a copy that gentleman that did my CD that just came out in the Netherlands sent me almost like LA Free Press. It has someone they called Antler around at the time, and just because it has him in there, that damn thing's worth $100. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
some guy called Antler. That's funny. It's been around for years.
And Kenneth Patchen,
a lot of that stuff is, I have a lot of that myself that I've kind of held on to because there's some great stuff that's come out of there.
But when I met Kenneth Marion Patchen, you know, I was 30, just turned 30, late 20s, and I thought, boy,
what year was that, FN?
Late 60s. God, when I realized that they lived in below the poverty level.
Yeah.
God, this.
Right.
And I guess I chose the wrong occupation. I'm in my 30s now, and I'm stuck.
Right. We have.
I'm just saying, I'm glad I've taken the path I have, and I'm not going to change.
Right.
Yeah, good. That's awesome.
Right. We have a caller, and I can't really identify because it's an unlisted. So if you have a block number, that's you, and you can just sort of chime in if you're on and you feel like, weighing in on any of this. I just put that call through. Like I said, I can't say the area code because it's a block number. So if that's you, you can go ahead and speak your piece. Well, hey, and that's expression,
awesome.
Right? I mean, we appreciate that around here. I mean,
is that dude up in Oregon?
Let's talk.
Your contribution is welcome, and we're wondering what you think of the term underground, and we're wondering if you feel like weighing in on that.
Well, underground reminds me of like Ed Norton.
Ed Norton. Well, Ed Norton was an underrated character, as many people in our circles are underrated characters. So that ties in.
Get in the van.
You worked in the sewers.
Yeah, are you a performance artist? You've got quite a range of sound capabilities over there.
Performance artist.
Yes, are you a performance artist?
No, I'm a lesbian.
Oh, you are? You are? All right. Yeah. Well, hey, that's cool. I mean, there are a lot of different things that you could have shared about yourself, and certainly your sexuality is a good one.
Your area code would have been good.
I'm sorry, that's not enough to make you underground these days, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm a woman trapped in a man's body.
You are. You're a woman trapped in a man's body.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I've been. Well, I've often said I'm just a. I've often referred to myself as an incredibly hairy lesbian with an unfortunate genetic mutation. That's been a frequent definite. But but it's. All of our bodies are trapped in one form or another. I empathize. I really do.
You could say hello to Kevin and Jack and Michelle and everybody and tell us a little bit about your position here.
Hello.
Hi.
That sounds like Kermit the Frog or somebody. Do we have a star with us?
Wait, is he or
frog?
She coming out of the closet or out of the underground?
Are you promoting the upcoming Muppets movie by any chance? Are you a plant from the Disney machine?
It's Beaker. It's got to be a. It's Beaker. I always knew Beaker was a lesbian.
With a sock monkey.
You play. You do. You do. Well, you know what? Actually, so do I. So there, you know, there's nothing. You know, I think that's a very noble way to pass time. Definitely. I wonder what Michelle thinks. Michelle, do you play with sock monkeys?
Michelle? I cannot comment on that. Sorry.
You can't. Well, yeah. I think case of Michelle, she's been sworn to secrecy about the sock monkey play. Court order.
To cop that, to the fact that I play with the sock monkey, but it's against the law if you'd ask me what I do with it. So.
Oh, I see. Well, we certainly don't want anybody to reveal anything that would be incriminating or, you know, cause the feds to take notice. And, you know, certainly, you know, deviant sock monkey play, I mean, I believe might even be illegal in the state of Georgia. So
it is, actually.
You know,
and that's
yeah,
one of the reasons.
Yeah.
We don't want to alert the feds or Disney.
Yeah.
Apparently.
They've got some tough laws. Yeah, they do. Well, you know what? I hope you know that we accept all types, you know, on our show, sock monkey, lesbians, it's
yeah,
all
Disney
good.
Yeah, but Disney doesn't.
I'm not from Georgia.
You're not from Georgia? No, you don't sound like it. So you actually have maybe a little more freedom. Are you in the Northeast?
No, ma'am.
Oh, Are you a? Let's see. Where it's like we're playing 20 questions. Are you interested in soybean futures and commodities?
No, ma'am.
You trying to say
no.
Indiana?
No, that's a shame. That's a shame because what we really need is the input of a really good, sturdy soybean farmer on this program. I think. You know,
I'll have one of my nephews call in.
No,
I have some
farmers,
but they don't deal in soybeans.
The Chicago Bears started out as Staley's in Decatur, Illinois, and that is a soybean factory.
There
fact.
You go.
That's a fact.
That's what we're
That's
headed
a
towards.
Fact.
Decatur, Illinois. That's where the Chicago Bears, because don't make fun of soybeans.
Well, you know, there's something about these shows that we try to do that I don't know, and Paul can probably explain this better than I can. It sort of devolves at a certain point. That's why, you know, that's why originally, yeah, we originally tried to go for 2 hours, and yeah, I think we sort of deteriorate when our attention spans only go so long. So we actually only have a couple of seconds left of this particular discussion. No, we've done an hour. We've done an hour, and if we go over, we're going to actually be in the archives. But I did want to mention that we're doing it again next Friday, and Frankie Metro is going to be on. And Frankie Metro is he's interested in talking about actually a different topic, the sort of the relationship between publishers and their writers in small press, what the publishers owe the writers, what the writers owe the publishers, what we can reasonably expect when somebody, you know, accepts our manuscript. I mean, I guess I can sort of leave it at that, but that's
I can see that conversation evolving into the gutter.
That would be a very good conversation.
Yeah, I think
yes.
So.
Both serious and satirical.
Well, no,
right,
I'll tell you why is because I think I'm going to leave his name unmentioned. He's coming back in, I think, and one of these days I hope Scott Young comes back in. But that'd be a good topic.
I got a chance to meet Scott. It was last year. It was just a really fantastic experience. It was earlier this year, actually. He came out to San Francisco and gave a feature. Yeah, he did. He did. And we had a gathering of rusty truck writers happening. That was. And Scott's an amazing individual.
I was in the hospital.
You would never guess he was a high school principal.
But you know, I think he changed jobs. I talked to him.
He did.
Yeah.
Small press. This show's devolving into a small press circle jerk.
Yeah. Well, that's what, like I said, what happens, and we're actually in the archives now, so we're not live at this point, but it's still recording
Alexander.
For a couple minutes.
Now,
it doesn't matter if we're going into the archives or not.
It doesn't. Well, you know, I'm just letting everybody know because I'm just trying to, you know.
Tonight you're going to cut the show off right when the conversation's heating up. Oh, I got to cut it off now.
What, Lynn?
Uh,
somebody's heartbroken.
No, Lynn, I do want to say something, and everyone. What might make that interesting is the small press scene back when Al Winans and Bukowski, mostly Winans, were doing Second Coming, and Malone and Wormwood Review. There was a lot of a cliquishness there, so it'll be a very interesting. It's much different today than it was then.
Right. Well, I think the internet also makes the circles wider. You know, I'm sure Michelle probably would agree with that too. She's definitely got her hands in a lot of the different. Would that you
cookie
think so,
jars,
Michelle?
If you will.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely has an understanding.
Michelle is one of my favorite publishers.
Yes, she
is. Michelle is a gossip mill.
Is she?
Well, God damn it, somebody's got to do
nothing.
It.
No, the internet makes it easier to find all different kinds of people, and if you don't care what click or circle they run in, then there's a lot more opportunities. And I
right.
think that's what I like, and
Here.
Right, absolutely. Me too. So I guess
communists,
sort of
all of you.
I think that's probably, I guess, a good note to end on. And I hate to do that. And I think it's great that you guys called in. I mean, I don't think I've talked to Jack or Kevin before. And I think the click thing is definitely important to mention that. I mean, one of the things we're hoping is that anyone and everyone feels like they're welcome to call in and participate and give their opinions and, you know.
Well, what I'm saying is that click thing has disappeared,
yeah.
And so there is a big difference.
Well, good riddance then.
And, yeah.
What the hell do you want, a small press slumber party?
Break down the barriers, man.
Hey, when I get to my cottage in Illinois, there's enough room. I'll put you guys out in the yard,
and we'll have a great girls can stay inside.
Yeah, that's right.
Start the Occupy Small Press movement.
You pulled
out
my
no
shed
leader.
With a Harley Davidson.
Huh?
We have no leader in the new organization there. No clue what we want.
Perfect.
No leaders. Yes.
Everybody be quiet now. Lynn Alexander wants to hang up.
I don't want to. It's just, you know, we've exceeded our welcome, I think, as far as Blog Talk Radio is concerned. But I think, and plus, you know, we're going to do it again next week. So, you know, we can't expend all of our energy tonight. That's for sure.
May I ask Lynn, will it be a different number?
It will not be. It will not be a different number. It should be the 805-856-2808. Yeah, it should be the same.
How did we get 805 area code? How did that get picked?
I don't know. I think fate smiled in your direction, and it just worked out that way. They gave it to us.
They shipped Boyardee for supper.
Yeah, well, hey, nothing wrong with that, right?
No, I'm just curious.
I'm going to go get that now.
That's what threw me off time-wise, because 805 is actually was my every code for many years, and so.
Right, they just sort of assign it to us. I mean, actually, Michelle set this up for us, so you know we appreciate that Michelle did this because she really set up everything and.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, Michelle. And I'll be the first to say good night, everyone. So Lynn can close us off.
Good night, beautiful people.
Good night, all.
Thank you, and thank you for calling, and we will do this again soon. Thank you. And thank you, Michelle, for calling. Okay, good night.
Bye-bye,
everybody. Thanks. Enjoy it.
Bye.